Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everyone. It's Red Men Radio, the Liverpool podcast. Not what the number? Liverpool podcast. We still haven't established what number podcast this is. We did ask people for help on this one. So if someone wants to go back through Acast and count how many podcasts we've done, that would be a big help. Because quite frankly,
we're not going
to
do it.
We're not going to do it. I mean, maybe we will eventually if no one steps up to the plate. But I'd like to start numbering the podcast. And if anyone wants to help us, do let us know by tweeting at the Red Men TV. So I was concerned because we got nothing back on this for a couple of weeks. Just a little follow-up from last week's podcast, which was expertly attended by Mr. Tom Dutton in your absence. It was a question about whether you'd rather have leg-sized fingers or finger-sized legs.
Yeah.
Your quick answer to that question?
Leg-sized fingers.
Wow.
Why?
We can't get into it. We spent so long on it last week.
Why wouldn't you want leg-sized fingers?
Because I said it would fundamentally harm how you interacted with the world.
So would finger-sized legs?
No, because you can have no legs and still get about. You can have wheelchairs. But if you had leg-sized fingers...
I'm not sure.
Anyway, we can't do this. We cannot. I'm so sorry. We cannot do this again.
What happens to the penis if you've got finger-sized legs?
Well, you'd be
your
fine.
Penis is just normal size.
Well, yeah.
It's going to look a bit weird.
Depends how big your fingers are.
It's going to look really strange.
No, it's just, well, maybe make it look bigger. You know what I mean?
That's why I shave, Paul.
But we asked someone if they could do a drawing for us of this. Thank you very much. Go and check out our Instagram, which is instagram.com/TheRedMenTV. Obviously,
I think having leg-sized fingers would be kind of like being Mr. Fantastic. You could just get things from dead far away.
Maybe. You could pick a nose from
I could pick yours right now.
3 feet away. Like,
yeah, I wanted.
If you so desire.
Scratch that part of the back that you just can't get.
Well, we've covered this. Listen to last week's podcast if you want me to. It's a substantial amount of time on this, but I thought it was interesting. But yeah, the cartoon was sent to us, and I actually can't remember the guy's name off the top of yet, but he's credited on Instagram. So go look at our Instagram to see a rendition of what that would look like if Tom had leg-sized fingers. Brilliant. And I had finger-sized legs. It is tremendous. Anyway, let's get stuck into it. The kickoff question for this week, Chris, comes...
You would land on your balls so often.
Why?
It would just you wouldn't be stable on your finger-sized.
What I'm saying is what I'm suggesting is you would give up on walking on your finger-sized legs. You just have a wheelchair. You just get about like you had no legs, because finger-sized legs are not good. They're almost as pointless as no legs. You'd walk on your hands is what you do, you know, more than anything else. But anyway, the point is, oh my God, no. Go listen to the podcast. It's great. I think the substantial extra weight in having those large fingers would change your back.
I think it'd be great for like trying to get Liverpool tickets when they go on sale, because you could have about 7 computers open and you could reach all of them from one seat. Mm. And you're just sort of typing away, trying to get in and trying to buy tickets.
But you might not be able to read the screen from that distance, because you'd have
point,
to be
actually.
quite far away.
Magnifying glasses. Yeah. Well, I would.
Yeah, there's a whole host of problems and solutions. There is no right answer to this other than it's, you know, finger-sized legs. So the kickoff question comes from Jordan_Gomez_10. Who would win a Royal Rumble out of the top 6 managers? Don't give me an answer. I want you to talk me through it.
Okay. Wenger's dead. If he gets thrown over the top rope, and he would die.
Arsene Wenger, to me, do you ever remember Giant Gonzalez in the wrestling?
No.
So he fought The Undertaker in like WrestleMania 9, and he was like 7-odd foot tall, and they put him in this mad hairy bodysuit, and he couldn't wrestle, basically. And it was Wenger's that, because he's big. He's a tall man, but I don't feel that he has got mobility at this point.
The only thing I think he'd have going for him is he looks the type of person to poke you in the eyes. Old school, maybe throw a bit of dust in your face or something, and then a little poke. But I think ultimately...
He's not getting you over the top rope.
He's not getting you over the top rope. I think he'd die if he was thrown over the top rope. So I wouldn't want him in there.
Well, he's in there.
Well, he's dead then.
Sad. So that's no to Arsene Wenger. Jose Mourinho?
I think he'd win.
You think he'd win?
I think he'd win. Because of the type of a football manager he is, he's the guy who gets thrown over the top rope, clings on with dear life. Everyone thinks he's out. He waits until the guy, and it'll be Jürgen Klopp, celebrating in the middle of the ring, and then he'd roll back under and fucking just throw Klopp over. And it's proper Mourinho, that, and it's just his football tactics played out in a wrestling ring.
See, I have that more down as a Conte or a Pochettino move. I have Mourinho more down as the, like, the New Age Outlaws, like, clinging to the corner, like, on the floor, maybe, underneath the bottom rope, like, scumbagging his way through it. He'd come in, you know, maybe like a Ric Flair or a Rick the Model Martel, looking for a record length in the Rumble. But I get the... It depends on whether he's seen as the weasel at the time or whether he's seen as the hot heel. Because if he's the hot heel and he wins, I think he does win. But if he's seen as the weasel, which he is in my federation, he tries all the scummy techniques, and then... He celebrates too much when he thinks he's eliminated someone, and Klopp just basically clotheslines from hell.
See, I think, oh, clothesline from hell? I've not considered that as a Klopp move. I was thinking the big foot, you know, the foot to, like, the face.
The Hulk Hogan big boot.
Yeah, I was thinking that would be a Klopp move, like, very much so, just straight in the face.
So we'll come on to Klopp a little bit more. I think Conte and Pochettino, for me, if I'm perfectly honest, and neither here nor there.
Conte would lose because, let's say, he takes Pochettino out. He's the prick who's celebrating at the ropes.
Maybe, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Over-celebrating. Someone comes up from behind, just chucks him out.
Yeah.
I think he'd be a formidable foe in the wrestling ring. I really do. I think he's got his downsides.
He'd come
too.
In with a lot of bluster. He's also the smooth... Actually, no, he's the second smallest competitor in there. Mourinho being the smallest. So he's 5'10", Conte, to Mourinho's 5'9". So the little scrappers. I mean, I know 5'10 is a decent height.
It's a good height. 5'10 and a half, Paul.
Only on your tiptoes.
Why do you think I like my Nike so much? They add an inch.
You lift, the Nike lift. Guardiola.
Yeah, I see him as a high flyer, Rey Mysterio type of a wrestler, to be honest. Yeah. Totally.
I had him as an excellence of execution.
Oh, really?
A bit of a technician as our pet. I wonder if position wise has anything to do, like, Mourinho, never a footballer. Jürgen Klopp, centre half, right back. Conte, centre mid. Wenger, no idea. Just Gian Gonzalez. Guardiola, DM. Pochettino, centre half. Like I said, I think in terms of it being a physical fight, I think realistically it would be Pochettino, Guardiola, Klopp and Conte are the ones, you know, if it was a bit more seriously, a serious physical encounter, I think these would be the ones to handle themselves. Is it just bias? But I can't see past Klopp winning this.
The only way is, I think, if Mourinho does what I said earlier on. I think that's the only way that Klopp loses. He's bigger. I think he's stronger. He looks like a bit of a fighter as well, to be honest. You know, he's a bit nuts. Like, you wouldn't want to get in a ring with Jürgen Klopp. Like, look, I think he's the winner.
Here's the thing. You know, they come in every 90 seconds or 2 minutes. The buzzer goes. How's Klopp getting in there?
He's running.
Ultimate Warrior style. Yeah. He is barreling towards it. He slides in and he just starts throwing roundhouse punches. And I suspect the first one to get a dig there is, like, I'm saying all five guys are probably in the ring at this point. Wenger gets a punch to the face and he stumbles back in his sleeping bag coat because he can't move his feet too much, and he just barrels over the top bin. And I could see Klopp clearing out a couple very early on in that regard. Yeah, I've got him as an Undertaker stroke Brock Lesnar style figure in this.
I like it.
Yeah. So I'm going Jürgen. Listen, this is a Liverpool podcast, and so if you think Jürgen doesn't win this, you're not in the right place. listening to this, you're wrong. But if you want to make a comical suggestion on how it might go wrong for Jürgen and how his over-exuberance might backfire against him, please do let us know.
He runs in and just runs straight over the top rope as he misses a punch.
Yeah, exactly. He's too busy focusing on offence and forgets to defend himself.
He's a heavy metal wrestler. Ooh,
yeah, he comes in like Legion of Doom style. Like, yeah, I could get behind that. Okay, great. So
he'd wear the spikes as well. I think they'd suit him.
Mm. Yeah, get behind that. Come in on a Harley of some...
A hog.
Definitely. So those of you watching the video version of this podcast, which is on the redmentv.com, of course it is, you know that by now, we'll notice a new addition to the studio we've got right here. We're at the Northwest Football Awards on Monday night. We were, as you can see, victorious. It's very nice winning stuff, isn't it, Chris?
It's lovely. And it's a very nice trophy.
It is a very nice trophy. Now, we've got the Football Blogging Awards once from a couple of years ago. It's about 3 years ago and four years ago. And I like them, but they're very flimsy by comparison to this. This is a solid, like someone breaks into your house and you need to reach for a weapon.
It's a good weapon.
Yeah, solid. It's heavy. I'm pretty sure that's what you used to kill the guys, Harrison Ford's wife in The Fugitive.
I'm not sure it would be a great thing to kill someone with, though. Because your fingerprints would stay all over it. It is
fingerprinty, yes.
It's like the Lombardi trophy.
The what?
Hold it up to the camera.
Oh, I have to put fingerprints on it. There you go. So it says, Fan TV Channel of the Year, the Redmen TV, for the Northwest.
And they've got the branding on the Redmen TV, right?
Yeah, they spaced it correctly. There's no capital M. I mean, that is largely my fault for... making RMTV a thing. I understand people's mistakes on that. That's all on me. But nevertheless, they have got it right, which is something to be commended. And what is even funnier is I think there's highlights of the event going out next Thursday, I think, which may well include your interview with the BBC.
Oh, dear. What did I say?
It wasn't what you said, it was how you said it.
Thanks for the free beer. Don't drink Prosecco, beer and wine on a school night, kids.
Yeah, how are you feeling today?
Rough. Rough as a badger's arse, Paul.
You claimed in the video, but that you thought you felt your hangover would only be moderate today.
Did I? Yeah. Well, I don't remember saying that. I was wrong regardless. It's not been moderate. It's been painful.
Absolutely.
So I had a little lie down and a shiver there for 30 minutes before.
Bad one. It was one of those decisions because I drove, but you left your car here. So you had to get up and get the bus. And what else did you leave here?
My coat. Fucking hell. I barely remember the bus journey, Paul. I barely remember having the kids for 2 hours this morning. I think Lyra fed me. She's one, by the way.
But yeah, the event...
I tried to eat a turkey and cranberry butty for breakfast. I couldn't even finish it.
What inspired that?
It's Christmas.
Fine. That's a stock answer for the next 6 weeks. I'll have that. For what you remember of the event, it was good.
Yeah, it was decent.
Any more?
No. The food was good.
Mm.
Food was very good.
Yeah.
The whole thing was good, actually. It was... The best part, and we will come on to it later, was the Brian Kidd stuff. I thought he was fucking brilliant.
There were two things that were really good for me, and just on a serious tone, there's a group called the Offside Trust,
yeah,
and they're a charity that's been set up. You know, obviously all this stuff came out this year from Dan Taylor's article in the Guardian about all basically like the a lot of the sexual abuse that was happening, the historic sexual abuse throughout all levels of football and what have you.
One journalist of the year for that as well.
Yeah. And
in the Northwest,
the Offside Trust basically set up to obviously help support footballers and sports people and whatever who've been affected by that. So there's a lot of that kind of stuff, which I was like, wow, that's heavy going. But you know what, it is the thing, with the greatest respect to the Football Blogging Awards, which you know we've had a good time at over the years. It was the difference between a proper professional established thing, and you know, I know, look, Anthony, who runs Football Blogging Awards, is a great guy, and it, you know, he set it up, and I thought, I actually think it's missing from the calendar. There needs to be something that fills that space for our industry. But to be invited to it one way, again, no Liverpool senior players there, but like obviously Gary McAllister's there, and the Liverpool ladies players who are up for things there.
Giggs and the Neville
Giggs
brothers.
Giggs and Neville brothers, exactly. You know,
Vincent like Company turns up.
Yeah, exactly. And so there was, you know, it was a proper event, which, you know, was a real, I think a real, I guess like a positive, real plus, a real, you know, thing ticked off the list as far as us what we're doing as Redmen and what our industry is doing to be able to gain recognition. I think there's one thing being added to a vote where it's all fan votes and it's all X, Y, Z, you know, but to be, I mean, that's the, you know, that's the 10th year of that. I feel like we're having this conversation. I feel like there was another iteration of it along those lines, the proceeding and what have you. It's a proper, serious, established event that the clubs all get it from the Northwest, all get involved in.
Yeah, for us to be considered, Liverpool was great. Representatives were there and stuff as well, weren't they?
So yeah, absolutely.
And
fantastic.
There's a real focus on some of the stuff. I mean, obviously the players and you know, James Milner was honoured on the evening and stuff as well. But there was a real focus on the community side of what the clubs are doing in the Northwest as well, which you didn't get at the Football Blogging Awards, did you? I mean, the way they did the offside trust initially, I was like, wow, this is same as you, really heavy. But when he started speaking it through, you're like, this is a great platform for them, you know, and you know, it's something that I'll take away from it and stuff. But then the fact that they spend so much time doing on what the clubs are doing in the communities and stuff like that as well, it shows that there's a real focus on the Northwest as a community, and that's right.
What was the one thing that they got horrendously wrong on the night?
There was no wine on the table until after the starter.
Wow. Wow. You've gone there, okay. No, it was the claim that Gordon Banks was dead. They did a video package.
They did.
Of all the people in football who died over the past year, and they put Gordon Banks, former England goalkeeper, Gordon Banks in amongst that list, and then 20 minutes later had to make a public apology because Gordon Banks is very much alive.
But they didn't apologise for the no wine in the start until after the start.
No, not as big a deal as claiming one of the greatest English internationals of all
time.
Depends
where you sat though, Paul, doesn't it?
But it was, yeah, it was, they dropped the ball. They had a good laugh at that as the night pursued. But anyway, listen, if you listen to the podcast, I know the podcast is a relatively new thing, but if you got onto it via there and you voted, thank you very, very much. Obviously, people are watching the video version, the subscribers, you guys are the core of what we do. I suspect the vast majority of our votes will have come from the people who already subscribed to the website. So again, thanks very much. It's one of those things that, look, unfortunately for our industry, I say fortunately, unfortunately, there's still yet to be a proper judges panel, because I don't think they know how to judge this. They've added it and they've done it to the public vote because A, publicity, but also B, I don't think they would, their panel of judges, which included like Kevin Davies and a load of random people, would have no concept of how to judge. And to be fair, they'd have probably given it to full-time Devils just because they've got more subscribers than us. So I'm grateful that it was the public vote. I'm grateful that people who watch and listen to Redmen like us enough to take the time out. So yeah, thanks very much. This award is 100% dedicated to you guys, but it will stay here.
We'll look after it for
we'll
you.
Take care of it. We'll find a nice place for it on the set, and that will be fine, and you can visit it every Uncensored Match build-up show. So one thing that really kicked me off into the podcast from last night, Chris, is that, for a start, it's International Week, so there's not masses of stuff happening around Liverpool, and I don't want to steal any content from Steve's got to generate a Reds News Roundup show tomorrow. So I thought I'd keep this a bit more top line. So Brian Kidd, current co-assistant manager of Manchester City, was honoured for his basis. It's like a lifetime achievement award, effectively, wasn't it? Vincent Kompany got up there, as you mentioned earlier. You had Giggs, Neville, Gary and Phil there to just talk about what a great guy he was and blah blah blah. And there was a statement that he made, because he was asked which team played the better football, the current Man City one or the class of 92 star one, and he completely failed to answer the question very diplomatically of him. But what effectively he said,
but he answered that by not answering it.
He did accidentally say Man United twice, which was an amazing Freudian slip when he was trying to say Man City, so effectively answered the question. But what he said was, you can't be judged a success unless you put silverware on the sideboard. And he said that's what makes these, you know, he kept calling the company Skip, which was amazing. And he said this is the thing about these two teams, they went and did it. you know, and they've gone up there and they've put the, they've put those trophies on the sideboard, which, you know, is nice because it feeds into us quite nicely. It makes us feel good about what we're doing. But it really made me think, because the way he said it really struck a chord with me, because it wasn't like, he didn't like, it wasn't like a grab the mic and it wasn't like a shouty thing. It was just, it was almost an offhand remark. It wasn't like a spoken by a zealot or anything like that. It was just him, it was like him breathing his truth about football. And I was really taken, really taken aback in a good way by that. And it made me think, do Liverpool have someone like that at the club already? And if not, and who might that be who comes close to it? And if not, do we need someone like that? And who might that kind of character be?
Okay, do Liverpool have someone like that at the moment? Probably not, no. That is the simple answer. Do we need somebody like that? Yes, probably. I think you always do. And, you know, they don't have to have done it at Liverpool either. You know, they could have come in from somewhere else. But the statement, you know, putting silverware on the sideboard is correct. That's what you need to do as a football side. We'll remember the Rafa Benitez side from 2008, 2009. We'll remember 13, 14. What did they actually achieve?
It's very difficult to have the argument about great sides without those trophies to back them up. Because I remember doing a video with Borsfield a couple of years ago, and I had to argue the toss from... I had to pick which was Liverpool's most exciting team in recent years and what have you, and I had to go up against, argue against Arsenal's Invincibles and the Barcelona team of like 2010, yeah. 11 or whatever it was, 12, or beyond that, forget the year, because they've been boss for so long. I had to go back to like the 88 era Liverpool team, because that was the last team that was great and also had, you know, real silverware under its belt in terms of league titles and what have you. Whereas like the 13-14 team, I think, was absolutely outstanding. But what's it got to show for us? And I thought it was quite telling recently, because I see a lot of people you do this like soapbox and this kind of stuff on Twitter, and it makes me, it kind of hit home that the right in some regard. You know, we talk about this idea of celebrating or accepting mediocrity. We laugh at that statement a little bit, but that was such a Ronnie Moran statement, you know, like he hated the big heads, and you know Liverpool win the league title, and they'd be celebrating, he'd be like, "Great, you won it, and what? Get out there and say, go win it again this year. I'm not asked whether you won it last year." And that attitude, I don't associate that attitude that Brian Kidd has with Liverpool at all.
Yeah.
And it's something that we could very much do with getting back to the foundation of the football club.
Yeah, I think you're right, mate. I think, you know, he's been there, he's seen it, he's won it. And not only that, as you said, it's like him breathing before. And it was, you know, he said it like four times, but he wasn't hammering home the point. It was just, it's how he spoke about football. It's what he truly believed. And I've seen,
if he'd been 13, he'd have gone, duh, at the end of having said it. Like, it was such an obvious thing to say.
There are coaches across different sports, and one of the ones, Bill Belichick from the New England Patriots, he just preaches, do your job. Just do your job, just do your job, just do your job. And he just keeps on saying it and saying it and saying it, and it's become synonymous with him and with that sports franchise and their winners as well. Like, and he just wants people to, he doesn't want you to do more, he doesn't want you to do somebody else's or this, he just wants you to focus and do yours. Yeah. And if everybody does their job right, they're confident that they'll win more than they'll lose. And although it's a different statement, it's very much become that football club, that American football club, sorry. And you can clearly see that Sir Alex Ferguson, Brian Kidd, maybe Mancini had those elements to them as well. Guardiola's got something about that as well. You see how many titles he's won over the years and stuff. And we just haven't had that. Now, Jurgen Klopp's got those two league titles in Dortmund, but that's not the length and breadth of your career. Mm-hmm. That's 2 years out of about 16 in coaching or whatever it is as a head coach. Not someone like Guardiola, who's won about 40 trophies in that time.
Yeah. See, I think Klopp's got it. I think he's the one and I think even Buvac have got it. But I think there's something to... So we've just come and we've just watched the press screen of the Kenny Dalglish documentary film, and it's mind-blowingly good. And there's a bit where George Best... talking in the 70s, I think in the 70s or 80s, talking about Kenny Dalglish, and he says, you know, I look at him as a player, but it's not just what he's done as a player, but also what he does, you know, all the things around it. He said that, I think it was Graeme Souness, in fact, says, what he's done as a player, but then also when it comes to being a manager, he's been a great player. He's done all this. He commands that respect. And I think, as I say, I think Klopp and Buvac will have that from what they've done. But I wonder whether this is where Liverpool having that missing generation to some extent. Like, it's Steven Gerrard, but Steven Gerrard not having that league title will always be something. You know what I mean? He can't impart that wisdom upon a squad to say, yeah, here's how you get over the line. Exactly. And that's the thing for Brian Kidd. He's done it, you know, he was like 3 or 4 Premier League titles while he was an assistant manager at Man United. Look, he had a crappy management career off the back of it, but then to move into City after a few years doing a few bits and pieces, he's got that. People think, well, what have you done? Well, that. Turn around and do that. And it makes you wonder what Kenny Dalglish's involvement actually is with the club, because I'd love him. I think he definitely has that ability to do that. But whether it's, as you kind of said before, or alluded to, whether there's something outside the box.
Yeah, I mean, look, listen, you mentioned Steven Gerrard and he hasn't got that, unfortunately. Jamie Carragher hasn't got that, but we all talk about him as a defensive coach online and stuff like that, but he's not got it. You know, there are people out there that will get this football club, that will get Klopp's style of football, and that will get and will have those trophies or the silverware on the sideboard, and maybe it's time to go out and get someone.
Gary McAllister?
Yeah, he's won a league title. He's won the treble with us. He doesn't feel like that type of a guy that we'd need, to be honest with you. I think he seems comfortable and happy in his life without all the extra strain and stuff that a job role like this would be all consuming.
That's it. I mean, the thing is, we had him, you know, we had the very brief spell he had us on the management team, didn't he, under the end of Rodgers' reign. It's just a shame because, again, in this Kelly thing, we'll be doing more on it this week, but I implore people to please go and watch it if they get an opportunity on the pitches or when it comes out on DVD, because it's phenomenal. Alan Hansen's in it, and I'd almost forgotten about Alan Hansen because he's not on telly anymore and all that kind of stuff. And this, again, he's too old and too far removed from things nowadays, because I think there's a value. And that's why, like, we just could do with someone like who is not so far removed from the modern game. Like I said, Carragher and Gerrard should be absolutely spot on, and so many guys, they absolutely are. And I think we're probably maybe asking for too much to ask for more than what they bring, because they've got the love of the club, the local lads, so they understand the heritage and all that kind of stuff. And they've got, you know, obviously a shit ton of silverware to back it up as well. But whether there's just and I don't know who that would be. Suggestions, people listening, of course.
I mean, like Sammy Hippie would be there, but has he got that? Has he got more than Gerrard and Carragher? Probably not. He's probably got about the same, you know, the league title, have they? I don't know what he did at Willem II or whatever, whether he won the league there or not. But, you know, he's in management. He gets the football club. He doesn't strike me as the type of person that would come in and play second fiddle anymore to somebody.
Yeah, but it's weird, isn't it? Phil Thompson
was it for Gerrard Houllier. Yeah. And he's probably, other than Ronnie Moran, the last guy that we've had doing that.
Yeah.
Because he had everything. Did he lift the trophy?
Sammy Lee as well.
Sammy Lee as well. He was a really well-respected coach. You know, he coached for England as well, as Liverpool and stuff. And, you know, he didn't have a great time at Bolton and stuff. But some people are better coaches than they are managers.
Yeah.
But the Phil Thompson thing, he's won everything. Yeah. Absolutely, you know what I mean? And he came close as a manager as well.
And it's
funny. But he won the treble as the assistant manager, didn't he?
Yeah, and it's funny because I see the way ex-players talk about stuff sometimes, and I get a bit wound up by the fact that it's like, because I think a lot of it, I always think of it as being a bit of bitterness sometimes from ex-players, like, you know, because they're not playing anymore and they see this new generation, there's a bit of bitterness and a bit of jealousy that they're able to just play and they're getting the plaudits and the money that they never got and that kind of stuff without having the success. And I think they are a bit critical at times, but it did change me thinking a little bit to, there's just something to having a guy in the club who is completely unimpressed by everything that someone does. It's like, oh, you've got that, have you? Great. Brilliant, well done. Fantastic. I've got 4 of them.
Come back in a few years.
Yeah, exactly. Come back to me. Having a bit of a yard dog at the club who has that, who's just every player at Liverpool wants to impress. Like this weird father figure that you're just desperate for a bit of love and affection from and won't give it to you because so it leaves you constantly striving to get more, to make him go well and to give you that. Was it this the thing? Like, Klopp's not, that's not Klopp's man management style. It is to some point. I think everyone craves the hugs, but you still get the hugs. Ronnie Moran doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who handed out a lot of.
You know what? We might be looking at this all wrong. As you were talking, then I started thinking about Gerrard and Carragher again. And where did Sir Alex Ferguson get that from? Where did Brian Kidd get this from?
Well, Brian Kidd was a European Cup winner with Man United.
But Ferguson did well. It was at 85. He won the Cup Winners' Cup with Aberdeen, something like that.
Yeah.
Had a few barren years at Manchester United before he really struck gold, as it were, with the class of 92 and whatever. Gerrard and Carragher might be the perfect base to start from. Those type of guys, and let them. This is what triggered it. You mentioned yardstick. Well, let Manchester United be the yardstick. Exactly like we were for them.
Yeah.
The two people with a bit of fire in the belly, Carragher, Gerrard, who want to get Liverpool back over the Manchester United hurdle of league titles, and maybe that's your driving force rather than the success you've had in the past.
No, I think that's perfect. It's funny because I think Man United feel a little bit rudderless in some regards, because, and this is where we were talking about the Man United game the other week and why the rivalry is not quite there. It's because it doesn't have that anymore. You know, Man United were built, in Fergie's own words, to knock Liverpool off the fucking pitch. That was, and which is why it's always amazing when I see them critical and they laugh at us, whereas it's daft, but we were the opposite, you know, the opposite force that encouraged them to be as big as they were. Without a challenge to overcome, would Ferguson have had to drive and do it? You know, he ended up falling a little bit short of his own targets, because he'll have had Bob Paisley there to, you know what I mean, as his driving force and what have you. We could do with having that. You're right. Yeah, it'd be great to have someone who's like, comes out and says that, like, Man United, great. Well, we just want our crown back, and we exist to get our to go and do that. Would be a phenomenal attitude to have. And I just wonder whether that's something that'll come about when, like, you wouldn't say that now.
No,
because why would you make a rod for your back? Because it's too difficult a job to do now.
Imagine how difficult it was back then for Ferguson, though. He was 30. He won 13 league titles, didn't he?
Oh yeah. I mean,
it was ridiculous. Yeah.
No.
And imagine us being 13 league titles behind and a manager going, we're going to knock them off the pitch.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be the guy to do it. And you're thinking, are you for real, mate? Yeah. That's going to take you 20 years.
Yeah.
And he fucking did it.
Yeah, exactly. No, it is.
We're only two behind, I think.
Yeah.
Is it two?
It's two, yeah.
No, maybe it's not that difficult. The problem is, you've got social fucking media now.
Yeah. That would be well, I would say it's not even Vine these days, is it? But that clip of getting wheeled out every time you lost a match, and then it'd be someone going, ha, 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 it's the next clip. The difference, of course, is that Ferguson won 13 titles in 13 two-horse races during that period. And, you know, again, it was what it was. It's not to denigrate the success of that, because God knows I'd swap everything for us to have that success and what have you. But yeah, you're right. Maybe the fact that, as you say, it shouldn't be an insurmountable challenge. It's not having to catch up by that fact.
Just as a little bit, I think that's a little bit disrespectful, because it wasn't always the two horse race.
No, you know
what I mean. But yeah, the majority of them were.
You know the point I'm driving. You could afford Man United in that era could afford to. The game was different. You weren't expected to succeed in Europe for the first, because, you know, they had only just gotten back into Europe when the Premier League era began. So they, you know, Man United did nothing in Europe until they won it in 99, effectively, because they had that learning curve and blah blah blah. Whereas for Man United not to be competitive on two fronts and all this kind of stuff, the pressures are completely different these days, aren't they? But it would be nice. And again, I don't know who that driving figure would be. Maybe that's one of those things where we find in years to come that Klopp sets the foundations, and it is someone like a Gerrard who comes in and goes, you know, again, just from me watching this Kenny thing, and you just I think Gerrard's got that quality to him, a Kenny Dalglish-esque quality, where he's very quiet and focused. And quite on he's the kind of person who, like, Jürgen Klopp's amazing. I wouldn't trade Jürgen Klopp for the absolute world, but I would love Gerrard to become that, because he has got that thing of where you kind of sit there and you can see the room falling silent to listen to what Steven Gerrard's got to say. He carries gravitas.
Like Zidane,
what he said. That kind of thing.
That'll be the type of manager that he is. I think, you know, someone who's stood on the sidelines, and when he talks to Cristiano Ronaldo, there's probably only one manager in the world that who talks to Cristiano Ronaldo, and Ronaldo goes, actually, he might have been better than me. And that doesn't fucking happen with Cristiano Ronaldo, does it? So, and you'd have that with Steven Gerrard. Literally every player on our pitch would be like, yeah, he was better than me.
And it would be amazing to see some of that. That's why the next few years are going to be very interesting in that regard. I want to see what he does with that under 18 side and what happens to those players coming through. Because, you know, we did a bit on Social Club this week where we talked about, like, the, you know, England are starting to reap the benefits of a really good youth system being put in place. And there's a load of talk of these. There's a couple of players in Gerrard's team who are being touted as being, you know, big next stars. And I can't wait for that moment when there's a lad that he's coached for two or three.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The years gets his break and you're like, and you see something in him and you know that Gerrard's brought that out of him. I'd love us to get back to that, the boot room.
Yeah, absolutely.
Style thing, because that's where we've fallen down. That's where we are becoming. We become more, every year that passes, we become more and more just another football club, which is what upsets me most. About the way we are, you know, losing that little bit of the connection hedge. We desperately need to jumpstart that. And it's sad that the only motivation, the only happiness I get from it is hoping that Man United fuck theirs up. Which I think they're not more than a season or two away from totally, you know, from them being in a similar situation to us, which is lovely. But yeah, fuck them. I'd like us to get back to them being.
I wanted him to, you know, learn his trade with the unders and whatever, but I would like to see him go with a group as well. I would like to see maybe a couple of years of training the unders, coaching the unders, moving up to the 23s. Yeah, exactly. And then seeing, all right, is there a job role at the first team that we can maybe groom him for and stuff like that? And see how he does with those players, because then he'll know those players and he'll know their strengths and weaknesses.
The good thing that he might have going for him, and if Brian Kidd could well be a perfect example of this, is that we talk about Gerrard from the manager's job, but that doesn't necessarily need to be a thing. You know, you mentioned already as well, the Phil Thompsons and Sammy Lees of this world, there's no shame and disrespect in being a great assistant manager at the club as well. Liverpool just needs someone, more involved in that, you know, a good solid figurehead at the club, and you throw it every now and again and just go, you know, again, just get it. When they see kids on the line, you know, Gerrard's amazing at it already. He's probably got, we talk about it, but he's definitely got a bit of that Ronnie Moran thing, hasn't he? You know, he is a very hard man to impress. God knows, I haven't been on the receiving end of a withering Steven Gerrard put down. It puts you in your place very, very, very quickly and makes you question every life decision you've ever made. We definitely need more of that at the club. So yeah, hopefully, I mean, again, perfect world scenario with Steven Gerrard. But if people are listening, I'd be interested in some outside the box suggestions if you've got them, or people who are around and about now. I know Zidane was an ex-Madrid player, and he was there and done it. Whether there's someone that we're not thinking of who's either gone on and done good stuff, or you know, like it would, the equivalent of that would be a Suarez in 5 or 6 years' time or something like that would be class.
Alonso,
Si Fletcher from downtown has just pulled the answer out the bag.
That's the right answer.
That is the correct answer, Si. Well done. So don't bother sending your suggestions in.
Yeah.
Forget interaction.
Delete.
Yeah. Now, but if you've got any other Alonso, let's run with this for a sec.
Javier.
Mascherano. Mm-hmm. That's another go. No, let's run with the Xabi Alonso thing for a second.
Okay.
What would you?
Pochettino style manager.
You think he'd be that?
Yeah.
Is that just because he's like got a bit of Hispanic vibe?
Not him, everything's like based on looks, but this one is.
The Xabi Alonso thing, I think, is dead right, because he is everything we're talking about. He's got Liverpool success, and then he's gone on and played for Real Madrid and Bayern Munich and won everything.
He's had a decent career, like
won the World Cup.
Decent, as I said.
2 euros.
Edging above decent.
Yeah, he just where would you put him?
Centre mid.
Sorry, Jordan. It's Xavi Men TV. I'd not really considered, because I think there was part of me that thought, oh my God, we're going to end up with another situation that we had when we bought him. I still contend to this day, Rafa Benitez was like, Steven Gerrard's getting off, so fine, I'm going to buy Xabi Alonso in. And then he stayed and he was like, ah, shit, how do I play these two guys together? Because as much as they tried to look at it back, oh, look at them, we played well together, they never. Steven Gerrard played right mid, left mid, attacking mid.
10.
He didn't play in his position until Xabi Alonso was gone from the club. So I was very much, when he was retirement, I was like, where would you put him? If he wants to be in management or coaching or whatever, if you've got Gerrard managing the under-18s, can you bring Xabi Alonso in into the first team coaching setup?
I don't know. You'd have to pay him less than Steven Gerrard, I think. It's just so Gerrard knows, you're still the guy, mate. You're still the guy that we want to bring through. I don't know. I imagine him as more like a tactical coach than anything else. I don't see him as a manager for some reason. I don't know why.
I'm not even sure what I don't even care if he wants to be a... You know what? We've done it a bit... I think we've done it... Like, the way we've done it in the past is like Robbie Fowler, just pop in the academy every now and again.
Teach him how to shoot.
I have a training session here and then McManaman would pop in and Rob Jones would pop in. Xabi Alonso, for me, should just go and train with the first team. If he wants to stay in shape, you know, doesn't need to be, you're our tactical coach. It's like, again, I've mentioned in the past, it's like what Zidane was. He's an ambassador as such, but effectively, he just goes and he's at Melwood every day, and he just goes out on the pitch. And if he wants to sit in with Klopp and all that and soak all that stuff up, they might find down the line that, wow, this guy's got some ideas that we can start
to... I think he'd be fucking wasted doing that. Think of all the managers that he's played under. Think of all the different type of styles of football that he's played.
Yeah.
You know, going tick-a-tacker with Spain,
yeah,
and winning the biggest trophies in world football. Playing under, like, Mourinho and seeing that side of things at Real Madrid. And was he there for Ancelotti as well? I'm not sure. Yeah, he was. And then Pep Guardiola at Bayern Munich. He knows everybody's fucking tactics in the top six, Paul.
Yeah.
All of them.
Yeah.
And how to beat them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And fucking, he would probably know more than fucking Jürgen.
Yeah. All I mean is, you're getting all that. You get all that, but the point is, you don't want Xabi Alonso, if he's going to have the impact, you don't want him in an office. You want him on the training pitch. You want him there, like Ronnie Moran was, with the shortest shorts in the world, just being better at football than all of our players, even though he's old and retired.
Yeah, maybe so. Like,
and then people come to him and go, what about this, Xabi? And he goes, let me tell you a story about the time that we won two La Liga titles or whatever, and then they go, oh wow, and how did you get around that situation? You know what I mean? That
I'd be there. I'd be explaining everything. That's what I'd be getting Xabi Alonso to do. Why have you done that? Why have you passed that there? Why is this? Why is that? Because I can see more than you on the football field, mate.
Yeah,
is the honest answer? I can see it all happening. It's like I'm in the fucking Matrix. That's why I create space for myself.
I see life in bullet time. You see it in fast forward. That would be very, very, very interesting. The one that you mentioned before as well, briefly, you know, we were linked with Mascherano last week. Messi linked us anyway. Yeah, when I saw whose contracts and stuff were up, I think I said, did I say it last summer? Did I have him on a list? Come on, it was players. But yeah, in a heartbeat. Javier Mascherano is exactly what our squad is missing. It's another example of what I talked about. It's a guy who loves it. He's a guy who loves playing footy. He's just dead passionate. And he's got loads of all the experience and blah, blah, blah. He is exactly what our squad is lacking. Fight determination. I think Steve tweeted today, he'd come and still be our best centre-half, even though he's 2 foot tall. I wouldn't play him centre-half. I'd just throw him, for those games where we just want a bit more solidity, throw him in. You might, you know, I'd just throw him in the DM. If you have to throw him in centre-half, great. He's your fortress centre-half, Javier Mascherano. Boo.
I'd definitely have him as a centre-back, mate. Defo. I don't know. It's been years since he played at centre mid. I don't know.
It's not, but he's played a lot. He's played a lot at centre half, hasn't he? Over that time. But it's. I'm not sure. I think he'd get killed in the Premier League at centre half.
Maybe so. But for me, he'd still be better than what we've got.
Maybe.
That's the thing.
He is also that type of centre half that we talk about a lot that we're totally missing.
Throwing in front of the ball.
Exactly. So yeah, I think they're all great suggestions. I think there's definitely something to that. 2008-2009 team and looking to people like, so maybe it is a more involvement for Sammy here, because I think he's got a similar thing, you know, he probably carries a similar aura with him as well, doesn't he? But yeah, I could get behind any of those suggestions. But yeah, if you've got more, let us know by tweeting at the Redmen TV and invent a hashtag and then put that in there, and then we'll work out, we're like, what does this hashtag mean? And we'll never know. So some questions. Andreas Kyriazis. Andreas. Should Michael Owen be removed from his position as ambassador, or
yes,
are people overreacting?
No.
I think people are overreacting about this video where he talks about being desperate to sign for Man United. That when I haven't seen the reaction to it, the reaction I saw to it didn't tally up with him. I did, maybe it's just because at this point nothing surprises me. The depths of his stupidity when it comes to not nailing his colours to a mask.
I think he's pretty stupid, because I think he was told it's going to go out in Spain and no one will find out. But what he forgot,
the internet,
is he spoke in English, Paul.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, because I would.
I think he was thinking it's going out in Spain. It's going to have subtitles. It'll be sound, and then he spoke in English.
He's just been told to talk about a specific topic, and he's got no concept of the world around him. Chris, this is not the first time he's come out with just some stupid shit since he's been a Liverpool ambassador. I think he should be removed as a Liverpool ambassador, because he doesn't represent Liverpool Football Club for me. And here's the thing, this comes back to a similar problem that we've talked about already, that there's a bit of a gap, and that's why Michael Owen is, because they're looking back at Liverpool's players who are global brands, which helps promote Liverpool, players who, because what Liverpool have made a shift towards in the last few years, they've got a certain amount of appearances to fulfil around the globe. You can't be sending your first team players over to Hong Kong every, you know, during the middle of the season. There's obviously avenues, there's fans all over the world, but you create these ambassadorial roles, and you can go and do what Five Times Co do really well. You can send a team of them over to, you know, you're going to Australia every 2 years, every 3 years, every 4 years maybe. But you can go and send those guys over every year and give people a connection to the football club. And I do feel like they've gone through, there's like a list, and they've gone, oh my God, who do we pick from here? And I really like Gary McAllister with the greatest respect to him, but he's been two years at Liverpool. I mean, for what a 2 years it was. But I don't... He's a Coventry player. You know what I mean? He's a Leeds United. He's a Leeds United player. I wouldn't have like Paul. I'd snap him up for the Masters like Paul Walsh back in the day. But Paul Walsh is maybe more Man City than he is Liverpool. Yeah. That kind of thing. And I think like Michael Owen, they've just gone. Oh, it makes sense. But there's it's another one of those things that the club gets wrong a lot. Is that the depth of ill feeling towards Michael Owen has been completely discounted. Like people have gone, oh, no one will care. It won't matter. It does matter. It does matter.
It matters to us here. I wonder if it does matter as much overseas. He might have been the reason that a lot of fans got into Liverpool Football Club.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's odd, isn't it? Because I think you're right. I wonder, overseas listeners, let us know your thoughts on the Michael Owen ambassadorial thing, because you'll have
a different viewpoint to us.
Or maybe, yeah. But let's use Torres as an example of this. I think Torres has rehabilitated himself because he's come. Here's the thing, like, Owen's come back and done like charity games at Anfield and been booed, but got on all right. Torres never got booed. Torres just got loved again. I think the fact that he went to Man United makes a big difference, and he can explain the circumstances all he wants, but. And maybe it's just because of these opportunities were not presented themselves to other Liverpool players.
To it than just the Manchester United stuff, though. That's a massive part of it, of course it is. But the other part is he could have come back to us, and he never. That's a big part in it for me as well, because he chose Newcastle because he didn't wait for us or whatever, do you know what I mean? And whether that's true or not, that's what I believe it is.
Yeah.
Because that's what I was told at the time, and there was rumours about it. And maybe that's wrong, and maybe my opinion's built on a false lie, as it were.
Well, this is the person I was saying before. Look, his side of the story is perfectly fine. I'm still very much of, I think he just could have done with having a bit more bottle and sticking to his guns a bit more, but inevitably that was Michael Owen in a nutshell. Michael Owen was England's Michael Owen, first and foremost, and there's just another thing that doesn't sit well. And again, that's not necessarily his fault. He's always been a driven character. You read about him, Si Hughes done a great thing in him in the last book, which I forget, Red Machine was the first one, whatever, the Ring of Fire. Thanks, Si. He obviously tries to, you know, make amends and all that kind of stuff. Torres comes across 10 times better for a similar thing. But that was what Owen was. He wanted to be a success. He wanted to be a first teamer. He wanted to be in the England team. He wanted to score goals for England. He wanted to do this and that. And again, this is the situation. Maybe what I'm saying is, Robbie Fowler didn't play for Man United, but would Man United have wanted Robbie Fowler?
No, not at all, because he was Liverpool.
And he was... You know, but we got Robbie. No, Man City gave us Robbie Fowler because Robbie Fowler was not in demand come the end of his career. Not at the highest level. We were the biggest club that was ever going to come back from. Of course, I don't know. So I don't know how I'd feel if other people had been given those opportunities. But it just boils down for me again. Michael Owen just doesn't. He never was really very Liverpool.
Here you go. If he was an ambassador for any of his clubs, who does he fit more with?
I don't think he fits with anyone.
Doesn't?
No.
England?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's who he would end up being, because he's not a Manchester United player. He wasn't a Real Madrid. And this is maybe very disrespectful.
He just wasn't successful enough on footy to do the Beckham thing. Because he should be. You're right. That's a bit of a shame. And it is sad, because I loved Michael Owen when he first broke through to Liverpool. I didn't love as much as Robbie Fowler. But it's hard. It's easy to forget sometimes because of how much time and the shit that he's done subsequently. But, you know, we all adored Michael Owen when he broke into the Liverpool team. But you're right, is that he just needed something else. Personality, probably.
Yeah. Different postcode.
Well, maybe. But then again, like I said, for the Beckham thing, you know, for him to be that. Because he's not a brand Beckham, is he? You know what I mean? And that's why maybe he's lacking something. So he would be fine for England,
better
but
hair.
He's not. Maybe better hair, maybe more, slightly more charisma. I don't know what the answer is there, but yeah. He doesn't, again, just pause down. For me, he doesn't fit as a Liverpool ambassador. I would rather have someone who genuinely loves it and genuinely loves the club, who's infectious enthusiasm for Liverpool.
The thing is, I've not seen him talk about his memories and stuff like some of the ambassadors. I've seen Berger talk, I've seen McAllister, loads of players talk about it. What are Michael Owen's stories? What's he telling? Because it's the FA Cup. It's the FA Cup, but I've never heard him talk about it.
Yeah, it's true.
I've heard the others.
Yeah, I've heard bits and pieces.
I've never heard him talk about how much he loves Liverpool. But he's also what all the other ambassadors do.
But he's also the only one who doesn't need the dough. So he doesn't need to be on the circuit, as it were.
But if he don't you think that if he was an ambassador and he wanted to be an ambassador for Liverpool, he'd talk about the club that he loves?
Yeah. Maybe,
but he doesn't love the club, so he doesn't talk about it.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Again, I don't know whether that's that or whether, as I say, is that he doesn't, because he is who he is. He doesn't need.
Paulie just loves golf, mate.
Yeah, golf and horses.
That's fine for him.
Yeah. As I say, he seems a waste. He's a bit of an empty shell for me in that regard. I get the idea from a business sense of a Michael Owen there because he's recognisable. He's still, you know, Argentina 98, still willing the golden ball and all that kind of stuff. He's definitely got
European striker of the year, European player of the year.
Yeah, that's what it was. He's got brand recognition, but
league titles.
Yeah, he's got the league title. Get him back in. Maybe he's our running man. Fuck off. LFC ZA with arguably one of the best questions we've ever had on this podcast. If you could change one result in Liverpool FC history, which would it be and why?
So my gut instinct on this, without thinking about it, when I first read the question, was Sevilla. Couple of years ago in the Europa League final, because I was there and I really wanted us to win that game of football. But I think there's a lot of depth to this question.
There is.
Did
you have any other what was your what made you pick instinctively go with the Europa League final?
I've just never seen Liverpool win in a final live, Paul.
Oh yeah, that yeah. Mine was I like immediately scanned through the games at the top of me brain almost, like, and it was ones that were talking about eras and what defined things and changed things, and the two that came to mind were that one, absolutely, because I just think of the kickstart it would have given Jürgen Klopp, and it just would have given us all a little bit more breathing room. I think it would have made the start to this season more bearable, because we've got that there. Like what's happening with Man United, you know, unfortunately you can't argue against Man United fans still, even though I'm hoping they see in the fullness of time that Liverpool have won a lot of those type of trophies in the last 20 years while they've been winning Premier League titles, and they're lovely, but I'd trade the treble in, maybe I'd trade the treble in for a league title. But anyway, the other one is, for me, is Athens 2007.
Yeah.
Because 6 European Cups is better than 5 European Cups, and how much that then set you up. Now I know we just don't know how time changes after that, because there's the whole Rafa walking the streets of Athens trying to work out what it really needs, and he comes up with the solution of, I need Fernando Torres, and he goes out and does that, and that affects him so he can go and build the 08-09 team. I mean, Arsenal Liverpool 4-4 in 08-09 season could have been different. You could say Liverpool Chelsea in 13-14.
Just for the fines.
Just to give. You know what? Yeah.
There's a personal thing and there's the Steven Gerrard thing there.
Yeah, not just because it would have set us up better for a title challenge, but because I just think it's that damaged Steven Gerrard's aura a little bit. Steven Gerrard should be absolutely gold plated on a pedestal, and it's annoying that he has to face those idiot like people who say jokes and like, Slippy G. I hate the fact that a legendary footballer, one of the greatest to ever play the game, has been reduced to a fucking meme.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Because of modern football. So maybe in that regard. There was
a right answer for this right question. Answer. And the right answer was a reply from @CoppitePete, who said, would reverse the win versus Hull FA quarter final 1989 for obvious reason. And the obvious reason for those who are wondering is we wouldn't have been in the semi-final at Hillsborough.
Yeah. I mean, the only, from a purely, you know, personal perspective, you know, it becomes, as we talked about this, becomes that sliding doors moment. You just don't know what would have happened. The only problem with it is that it doesn't, all you're effectively doing is swapping 96 Liverpoolian lives for 96 Hull fan lives is the only issue with that thing. There's I don't want to lighten the tone on that too much, but did you ever watch Quantum Leap?
Yeah.
So there's the story of a guy who could go back and jumped into people's bodies and he could change events in history to change things for the better. And there's the JFK, there's like a 2 or 3 part episode, and effectively, for everything he changes, he puts something else has to go in his place. So it ends with the story that, you know, he ends up saving Jackie Kennedy's life, but JFK is always going to go. And that's the thing for that. So from a pure Liverpool perspective, it's definitely the right answer, because, my God, think about this city if it hadn't had to go through all that stuff. You think about what, and then from a pure selfish footballing perspective, what Liverpool could have been if they'd done...
Well, that's it. Kenny stays. There's so many more things that happen after the back.
You could take it back and, you know, Liverpool, I don't know who we played in the semis, but you think back to Liverpool not getting to the final, not getting to the Heysel final, you know, in 85. And if Liverpool, if it's not Liverpool fans in that situation, do another set of fans act more sensibly? And, you know, that ends up being a completely different scenario. And then does that mean English teams are not then? But, you know, if it's a non-English team in the final, English teams don't get banned from Europe, and that changes the whole landscape. So this has got book or movie written over it.
I would personally take one of the 08-09 games, because I think we finished 2 points behind Manchester United that season. I think I'm right in saying that. Is that right? Anybody know? All right. We win the league that season, let's say. Right. And that Rafa Benitez side goes on to achieve more for me.
Yeah.
And that would be... I would have felt, if it was a straight choice between Rodgers' 13-14 side winning the league and Liverpool winning the league under Rafa Benitez, I feel like we'd have had greater success afterwards with the Benitez side winning the league.
I'd have loved it, because that was the natural progression for that. Brendan Rodgers
was like fourth, third, second.
Brendan Rodgers was just mad, because it was like we went from seventh to top, effectively.
Four points,
so one game wouldn't have changed that.
Did we drop
any points to Man United?
What about the first game of the next season? Because I know we lost three games dead early on, and
we got
killed
by
that.
It was Spurs first game or second game, but yeah,
could have changed that season in itself, because Carragher said after those three losses, that's all the losses that we conceded last season. Do you know what I mean? And their heads were gone, because they knew they were out of the race almost, because that Manchester United side were great and stuff. And then Rafa Benitez wins the league there. The ownership, you don't know what would have happened with the ownership, but that might have changed it as well. It's crazy.
You know, if there's a way to engineer, and someone might have the mathematical way of working this out, that gives Rafa Benitez a title, you're dead right, because that was a year-on-year progression. We got better and better and better, and unfortunately we peaked in 08-09, whereas that should have been the dust ourselves down and go again the next season even better and stronger, whereas the wheels all started to fall off with the ownership stuff there. The Brendan Rodgers thing was like we burned brightly but shortly there. Like I said, we went from seventh to second overnight, and that's weird and unheard of. That
at the time,
yeah, well, exactly, yeah, absolutely.
fucking Leicester,
yeah, fucking Chelsea. So you don't know whether there was. I still think that the jury's out on whether Brendan Rodgers is genuinely a top level manager. I think, you know, he still has, it's still very much in potential for him. I think he is good. I don't know whether I would have. I just like the fact that we've ended up with Jurgen Klopp. I'd have happily just had Rafa be good for the interim years and then leave, and then Jurgen comes and takes over from Rafa to add a new dimension to what we do. But yeah, that is a fantastic question. And this is, we could do an entire spin-off podcast, I think, on this, which one day, if we're ever short on content, maybe we'll revisit this. Just quickly then, because we've gone longer than I thought we were going to go this week. David Savaglio, no Italy in the World Cup. How do you guys feel about it?
I'm not asked.
Really?
No, I'm not asked.
This is like 60-something years.
So?
For the first time, Italy won't be in a World Cup.
So? Okay. Why is everyone asked?
Because Italy are a staple of World Cups.
Do you know how many games they've won in World Cup finals since they won it in 2006?
Go on.
One.
Really?
One.
Against England?
Against England.
Wow. Wait there. That can't be right.
Why?
So they qualified
in World Cup finals. So in the finals.
Yeah, but how do they get out of the group that year?
You can draw, can't you?
Did they draw three games?
I'm not sure exactly, but that is it. That's how many games they've won.
Where did you get that?
Twitter.
Okay. I'm skeptical.
But the point is why is everyone asked?
Gianluigi Buffon.
He's won it.
Yeah. I
just don't understand why people are arsed.
Because Italy, for me...
They seem more arsed about it than if England never got in.
Yeah, but this is...
It's because Buffon's a great goalkeeper. He's had a great career. He's won loads of fucking stuff. Yeah. He's had his fill.
Yeah.
It was emotional watching him break down.
Yeah.
But am I arsed that Italy aren't in the front? No. I'm not going to watch them anyway.
Yeah. I would, though. What I like about Italy is they always have that way, historic way of... They're just a great... historically great tournament side, and you think about the great memories of watching those sides throughout the World Cups, go back to 90 and Toto Scarlatti and 94 and Roberto Baggio and Del Piero in 98, and you know
that's not this Italy side.
No, of course not, but I don't know this Italy side
exactly,
but I didn't
so
know
why the, is anyone asked?
But I didn't know the Italy side then either.
Fucking Ciro Immobile or whatever his name is up front.
That's definitely his name, yeah.
Fucking hell, like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but
no one asked about him.
They've got
Bonucci, and they've got Chiellini, and they've got Buffon, and they've got Banega, is it, the right back and stuff like that. Their defence is fucking class, but it didn't stop them shipping loads of goals and not making it.
Yeah.
They don't deserve to be there. Because they couldn't beat Sweden in the qualifier.
Yeah, but this is not a question of whether they deserve or whether they don't deserve.
I just don't understand. If you can give me a good reason why you're arsed, genuinely arsed.
What's arsed?
Well, that's the question.
Well, what do you mean? What's arsed? I'm like, as in, like, well, define arsed.
Bothered.
I think the world, it's like... I can't find a good analogy for it, but there are just teams that... for me, are synonymous with the World Cup, and Italy are one of those teams.
They are synonymous.
And to not be able to see Italy in a World Cup is just weird. And the fact that we're going to end up with... I mean, look, if Iceland have an amazing tournament, that kind of thing, then great. You know what I mean? These teams that are becoming the new cool teams or whatever, yeah. But I just like seeing it. Now, here's the thing. If they'd not... the whole winning in 2006 thing... my opinion on this has changed massively because, again, I'd have thinking about all the match fixing stuff that went on around there. If Italy don't win the World Cup in 2006, wasn't it?
Yeah.
If they don't win that in 2006, it doesn't gloss over all the match fixing stuff that's happened in Serie A at the time. And it means that the clubs that ended up getting a little bit of a free pass on that, because there's, again, the thing that wound me up around that, going back to Liverpool, AC Milan should never have been in the 2007 final, because they started that season in Serie B where they were meant to start it, and by the time the season rolled around, they kind of go, it's fine, and then put them in, and they
point
got
deduction.
Back, and they started in Serie A, and they started in the Champions League, and I still contend to this day, it's because everyone was just so buzzing with the World Cup that it was like, oh, forget it, come on, let's just go on. Oh, you scamps, go on, carry on, back as you were, carry on. My feeling of it is it's not arsed. It's not about am I gutted, am I devastated? No. But it's weird for me to not have it in. It's strange
because it hasn't happened in our lifetime, Paul. But am I arsed? No, I'm not fucking arsed.
Yeah.
They're Italy.
Yeah.
So what? I just don't see why people are fucking bothered.
But here's the thing, you are like aggressively not arsed.
By people fucking spamming me timeline with the fucking photo of Buffon. I've seen him before.
Yeah.
I said it was really emotional, but I just don't understand why people...
But why are you so aggressively not arsed?
Because of everybody else being okay, fucking arsed.
So John Reed says, best animated sitcom. Rick and Morty for me. Time will tell on Rick and Morty. I really like it, but I wonder whether in a 2 years' time.
I loved Archer probably more than anything recently.
I grew out of that a bit. Like, I loved the first two series of that. It's really, very good. But is it the best animated sitcom?
I always thought South Park was probably the wittiest.
South Park is good. South Park's still good, which is the good thing about it.
South Park and Matt Stone are just fucking killers.
Absolutely. Right? If you could delete every episode of The Simpsons after like series 12,
That's a lot of series. That's more than you.
That's
pet.
More than you get probably at this point. It's definitely The Simpsons. Venture Brothers is really good.
Thundercats was boss.
Thundercats holds up surprisingly well, as does the real Ghostbusters.
Dungeons and Dragons as well.
But these
are
not
Dungeons and Dragons,
not sitcoms as such. So you're talking Futurama, Family Guy, South Park,
I did love
Simpsons.
Family Guy.
Family Guy's another one that if you could delete everything after series five of that, probably.
I think I'll stick with Archer because that's the one that's made me belly laugh more than the others over recent times.
South Park, I go with South Park just because, again, I don't really watch any of them anymore. But the turnaround time and the fact that it's managed to stay current and satirical. And I love the fact that Channel 4 did that countdown of the best 100 cartoons or whatever it was. And they did the whole The Simpsons Did It thing, and how they just hate The Simpsons because the writers sat in a room going, what about this? And someone just goes, The Simpsons Did It. The Simpsons Did It. And they're like, fuck off and go away. So let some other people make some cartoons, which is hilarious because think about how long South Park's been around. We were 11 when South Park started airing. That's terrifying.
It's mad, isn't it?
I still think of it as being quite new. Family Guy, we were 17 when that started.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
Madness.
Mental. Let us know your answers to any of these things.
When Raw started?
Raw. Ooh.
Is it still the longest running weekly episodic sports entertainment show on broadcast?
I'm amazed that you remember that. how many takes it took me to get that right on that video I did back in the day? Probably. But there are caveats to it, I think, which I don't care about. Raw started in the mid-90s, I think like 96, wow. Maybe. Yeah. Raw, Monday Night Raw, Raw is War, etc., etc. The War Zone, if you will. Anyway, let us know your answers to anything that we've discussed by tweeting at the Redmen TV, by email and interact at the RedmenTV.com for some long form stuff. If you're on the website, you can use the comments box underneath the post. If you've watched the video version of it, hello! And so on.
Stop being asked about Italy.
Everyone stop being asked about it. You stop being asked about people being asked about Italy.
I will if yous will.
No one will remember come the summer. No one will remember or care. But yeah, brilliant. Thank you very much. As mentioned on every single one of these things, if you're in a position to review this podcast on iTunes or Acast or Stitcher or Podbean, are we on there? Who cares? If you can give a 5-star review, whatever, man. But wherever you find us, rate
We've
us.
We've had 2 comments on Podbean, I think.
Great.
I get emails.
Quality. 5-star reviews always help with the old algorithm. We want to make this the best Liverpool podcast going, so your help would be immense with that. Once again, thanks very much for helping with the award. Go to redmentv.com if you want more great Redmen radio podcasts, final words, Reds news roundups, and a whole heap more Lucas Laver exclusive interviews. Boss,
ooh.
Boss. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Paul.
Go back to your deathbed. / your emails.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.